This coming Monday, the nation will observe the birthday of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The civil rights leader took his message of nonviolent protest throughout the South, including Tampa. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. He was a familiar face and voice in the 1960s.
I went through the discipline of early elementary school education and then high school and college and theological training, but never did I realize that I would be in a situation where I would be a leader in what is now known as the civil rights struggle of the United States.
That was Martin Luther King Jr. during a 1961 television interview. On November 19, 1961, King spoke at Tampa's Fort Homer Hesterly Armory. While no recording of that speech has surfaced, there are recordings of King around that same time speaking on similar subjects. At the time of King's 1961 speech in Tampa, local resident Clarence Forts was a leader in the NAACP student chapter. Now, more than five decades later, Fort returned to the now vacant armory for a conversation with historian Rodney Kite Powell of the Tampa Bay History Center.
It's been a long time since I've been in here.
I was just going to ask you, when was the last time you were here?
Oh, man. Well, they used to have concerts here. So I came to several concerts here. But it's been quite a while.
Just walking in these doors, does that meeting, does that rally bring back memories when you walk in here and look around?
Yes, actually, that was the interest back there at the time. I estimated about 5,000 people. I actually don't know how much it held, but every seat was filled. 1961, and that was the height of our integration period. Actually, we started February 29th, 1960, with the lunch counter sit-ins.
Yeah, before we get into the Martin Luther King Jr. Meeting, let's talk a little bit about that, because you were a part of those early lunch counter sit-ins in 1960. Can you tell us a little bit about how that started, how you all here in Tampa decided you wanted to start those sit-ins, and if there was any resistance? Obviously, the resistance among the white community, but was there any resistance among the older African-American community about what you guys were doing?
Definitely. Actually, I came to Tampa in July 1958 as a young barber right out of barber college out in Texas. I joined the NAACP Youth Council, and I became president at the age of 20 years old of the Youth Council. Now, the adult branch was against it, because if you know anything about the NAACP at that time, they do not start demonstrations. If you get into trouble, they will back you up if you call for that. But they wasn't all about that, so they tried to talk us out of it. Mm-hmm. But our
but
group
you guys
was,
didn't want to hear that.
We didn't want to hear that, no. So I was the older of the group because everybody else was high school kids. Mm-hmm. And I went out to the local high schools and organized African-American high schools, Howard L. Blake now, and Middleton. And I talked with the presidents of the student council. Mm. And they got me some people together, and we had a target meeting date. Mm-hmm. And that's how we started our sit-ins. Now, Tampa was a little different from most cities. It was very moderate. We had a very liberal mayor. And actually, once they find out, after the first day, it was kept a secret. Mm-hmm. After the first day, then the mayor got involved, police department got involved. And instead of beating us with billy clubs and police dogs, they escorted us down to the lunch counters. Now, that was unusual. That was different. So as a result of that, Tampa was the first city in Florida to integrate.
Obviously, you would be. You saw what was going on in Greensboro and other places with the violence. And so I imagine the first day, were you anticipating violence and a violent reaction?
We didn't know what to expect. Everybody was on, your nerves are on end. I walked in, I took the first seat, and I had a little Bible with me, and of course, I started reading my Bible. The funny thing about all of this was, I think we started out about 35 kids that first day. Nobody had money to buy anything anyway. That's what was funny.
So if you'd ordered something and they'd have taken your order, you'd be in trouble.
If they had taken our order, we would have had to get to leave. But we knew they weren't going to do it, so we just sit down and they put lunch counter closed signs in front of us and cut all the lights off.
So speaking of that kind of nonviolent protest, let's talk about Dr. King.
Okay.
So when he came here in November 1961, what was it like when you first heard that he was going to be here? I imagine you knew ahead of time that he was coming. How did we even get him to come here?
Dr. Lowry, Reverend Lowry at the time, knew of what he was doing with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And he was getting to get popular and branch out. So he brought him here to make that speech. Now, prior to that, we had a lady by the name of Daisy Bates, and I don't know how far you go back, but she was with the Little Rock 11. She was instrumental in helping integrate Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. So we had a mass meeting, and actually she got here before he did, but she spoke at one of the churches. But since he was coming, it was not large enough to accommodate the crowd, so they moved it here. But he was electric. Man, it was on fire, if you ever heard a motivational speaker. And he just wanted his traditional speakers. Mm-hmm. We're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And don't let anybody turn you around. But we had a lot of people lose jobs because of the integration here. They were, a lot of them was maids and even janitors. And we had several guys that was working at the Palmacia Golf Course. And we actually had some of those guys come take their kids off of the stools at the counters because it hit television and the newspapers, and they didn't want their employers to see their kids involved in it. So those are some of the things that we face. Me, self-employed. They couldn't fire me because I was a barber. That's why I was able to pull it off. But anybody else who had a job with the establishment, they couldn't do it.
Now, before Dr. King even spoke here, there was a bomb threat that was called in here. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, they didn't know what to do, and they had to, of course, clear the place out, and they had enough security around here. But it didn't dampen our spirits. We came anyway.
Was there a large police presence here for Dr. King's speech?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And was that intimidating, or was it, did it give you a sense of security?
It was definitely not intimidating. They had a different mindset. A TPD had a different mindset, and I never seen anything like that. But it was because of the city fathers, of course. They didn't want the violence. And then again, Tampa is very multicultural. We have the Hispanics, we have African Americans, we have Italians, and then we have European Americans. So we actually had full groups. So it's not like a lot of cities where you, let's say Orlando, where you, now it's beginning to, you know, get a lot of Hispanics. But they just had African Americans in the white community there, when we had four.
So you attribute that multicultural aspect of Tampa to the success, or part of the success.
Right.
Now, you'd mentioned the police, and we talked about the police a bit. Was the police force integrated?
We had several police officers, as well as sheriff's office. They just couldn't arrest white people. No, absolutely. They could not. If they had encountered a white citizen, they had to call another white police officer. That's ironic because I retired from the sheriff's office 11 years ago as a detective and as a community organizer.
And what specifically was the focus of Dr. King's talk here? What did he talk about?
Well, keep moving forward. And he just talked about jobs, the economy, things we couldn't do, and we had to keep moving ahead. We know we were going to have some hard times, but God was on our side, and that was our rallying cry.
And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting.
So we really got people to buy into that.
How long did he speak for when he was here?
Oh, about 45 minutes.
How often was he interrupted by applause, do you think?
About every three or four lines. They were really fired up. It was a lot of people, I'm sure, was afraid to come, but they came anyway.
What did Dr. King not look like, but what was his appearance when he was here? How was he dressed? And how did, you've of course seen pictures of him, probably seen him on TV, but what was it like seeing him in person for the first time?
Looked like a young man, a regular suit. He couldn't have been too much older than, I'm 74 now. So at that time, I was 21, and he might have been 30 at the time. He might have, but just a young man. I mean, a young college student out of college, and just radiant.
But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
It's, I don't know, it's like a movie star, like somebody great, which he was. But we didn't know how great he would become at that time.
Yeah, because it was still pretty early in his career as a civil rights leader, and so he wasn't Dr. King, so to speak, yet he was Martin Luther King Jr. who was speaking, but he wasn't who we come to know him as, because he hadn't done the speech in Washington, D.C. He hadn't done a lot of those things yet.
He hadn't led all the boycotts, and he hadn't done a lot of stuff that he later on, you know, became famous for. And actually, he was really just getting started himself. I have quite a few of his speeches, and like the letter from the Birmingham jail.
My dear fellow clergymen, while confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely.
And when I go out on a speaking circuit, I bring that up in my speeches. In fact, last February I spoke at HCC, the Delmeva campus, and we might have come over on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. I spoke on that. And that was awesome, and I used that letter from the Birmingham jail.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly.
That was an awesome letter, and that's what almost brings me to tears when I read something like that.
You'd mentioned that you guys brought Dr. King here for this speech particularly. Do you remember if he stayed in Tampa overnight, either the night before or the night after? And if so, where would he have stayed?
I think he did stay in Tampa. We had a African-American motel here in Tampa, in the West Tampa area, a nice place. I'm trying to think if it was on Cypress Street. And there was actually some African-American hotels on Central Avenue. Pioneer was one, and they had several of them, so I'm sure that's where he stayed. I can't say for certain, but I'm sure that's where he stayed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fort. This has been an incredible pleasure to speak with you about both your career and the civil rights movement and talk about Dr. King's time here in Tampa.
Right. I appreciate that. Thank you.
That was civil rights activist Clarence Forts and historian Rodney Kite Powell at the Fort Homer Hesterly Armory in Tampa. King spoke there on November 19, 1961, though he was supposed to speak there earlier. You can see newspaper clippings reporting the bomb threat that delayed that speech and hear Clarence Forts' recollections of a weighed-in protest at Ben T. Davis Beach at WUSF.org/Florida Matters. Just look what happened to the Indian and the brother. And that's it for today's show. Thanks to the Tampa Jewish Community Center and Federation for access to the Fort Homer Hesterly Armory. The group plans to turn the old armory into an event space. Also, thanks to Lamont Robinson of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Signature Collection for the audio recording of King reading his letter from a Birmingham jail. Florida Matters was produced by Dalia Colon with engineering help from Dustin Hapley. I'm Kirsten Cooper. Thanks for listening.